Jeff Merrick, I watched hockey last night. Hockey, hockey, hockey. Well, that's not true. I was slipping back and forth between hockey and Monday Night Raw, which is, of course, the day after WrestleMania, Monday Night Raw, which is always when all the smart fans buy all the tickets and go to the show and come up with chants. They
What happened?
I believe the chant when the Big Show entered the ring was either please retire or just retire.
Oh, man. So essentially, everybody from the MTS Center went to Raw last night.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And so I was slipping between that and the Calgary Dallas
Holy
game.
Smokes.
And I got, dude, we're starting to get little dribs and drabs of playoff games as we get closer and closer to April 9th, which I think is around the end of the season. And last night was that pace. That was an insanely fun game. And once again, you know, I've been trying to convince myself that one of these Western Conference Canadian teams would find a way to slip out of the playoff picture.
Doesn't
and I always
like
thought
it
might be the Flames because the Kings obviously had a pretty good angle on getting up there and knocking them out of the three seed, but they are not going quietly into that good night, sir.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I think Calgary is a playoff team.
I don't know. I honestly have no clue because I'm like many people. I'm just waiting for the bubble to burst with Calgary, and every time that I think it has, they blow the bubble up again.
Right.
And how nice was that Rafael Diaz goal last night?
It was awesome. Huh?
Like second goal of the year. It's a beaut. But there was a lot. Honestly, the first four games of the night last night all had a real intensity to them. Whether it was Tampa and Montreal, Vancouver and St. Louis, because you know Vancouver's still not out of the woods. Chicago handing it to Los Angeles. How you like that score? And then what you match, which may have been the best one out of all of them, Calgary and Dallas. Like those first four games on the board last night, that was puckgasm last night. I'm sorry, man. Those first four games was amazing.
And you felt the push at the end from Dallas, and it kind of felt like they were going to find a way to sneak one through.
When Demers scored, you're like, uh-oh, here we go. Calgary going to fall apart in the third. Yeah, I know.
And you could see the looks on their faces after the game. I mean, they're still mathematically alive. The tragic number is four, but they're cooked. I mean, they're done. They needed that one in a bad way. So not to eulogize them all that much, but we'll go ahead and do it anyway. What do they do in goal? Leighton's. I mean, they've got to move off Leighton at this point.
Thing is, man, when he's on, he looks so good. I mean, he's almost become like the Alex Kovalev of goaltenders.
Whoa!
Like, there are those performances you see every now and then. You're like, oh, that's the guy.
Will there be five-person protests in the town square of Dallas when they try to trade him?
But the thing is, like, we've been saying this about Lehtinen since he was drafted by, wait for it, Atlanta.
Yeah.
All right. Like we've been saying this about Lehtinen for a long time, and he's never been anyone who's, well, let's just be blunt, been in shape, and that's always been that when the book is finally written on Kari Lehtinen, it would be squandered opportunity because he was never in shape. I mean, ask anybody. I've talked to so many people in Dallas who have said the same thing.
Book.
Like, man, it would do. Like, there are so many guys you look around the NHL and you say to yourself, and maybe Phil Kessel will be one of them one day, you say, man, if only you would have, although Kessel snaps in 35 every year, so maybe I should shut my mouth. There'll be guys you look at and say, man, you had that chance. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand the concept of playing in the NHL and not being in shape. Like, I try to, myself, either get to the gym every day or go for a run every day or I do something every single day. Right, for just for body maintenance. And I just talk about hockey on television. If I played hockey, it would be nonstop, I would assume, unless I might have been burnt out by it. But like, wouldn't you like live in the gym? Wouldn't you be Rod Brind'Amour? Like, wouldn't you be that guy? Wouldn't you be Scott Stevens? The guy that's like, you know what? I'm gonna make the most of this opportunity. I've got 10 to 15 years to make, you know, gobs of money. That's going to set me up, my family up, and my grandkids up. Why would you not do that? Just say,
no,
I'm going to take the next 10, 15 years and go for it.
I would probably be someone who would weigh a bit more than I should, make a lot of money in my 20s, put up really good numbers, but not the great numbers that I could put up, and then kick back with a few pops and a pizza every night after the game as I play a pool in my beautiful Toronto condo with Tyler Boza. Oh, I've said too much.
Yeah. have gone on to. I remember talking. I think I've told the story before about. I remember having dinner with Lance Evers, who wrestled as Lance Storm.
Oh yeah.
And this was, this was probably about, 10, maybe even 15 years ago. So we're having dinner at the Hard Rock downtown Toronto, and he's in for a house show at WWE. And this is when I was eating meat and stuff, and I was getting all big. I had like a steak and potatoes and a big beer, and right?
Hold on, I'm
and
almost
so
there.
Lance, I know, slow down. Just do this, say that again, but say it slower. Lance has like steamed vegetables, no butter, a dry piece of chicken breast, and a water. And I said to him, don't you ever want like a big sort of, you know, fatty meal, like something you just indulge in? And he says, yeah, of course I do all the time. But let me ask you a question. I said, what's that? He says, do you go to work in your underwear? And I said, no. He says, I do. I'm guessing if you went to work in your underwear, you probably wouldn't be eating what you're having now. But that's what I'm thinking of myself like, as a hockey player. Like, how could you not? Like, I'm looking at Kari Lehtinen, and I'm saying to myself, man, I know you maybe for most of your career you've been able to just to surf on skill. But wouldn't there be a part of you that says, you know what, I could really be an elite-level athlete in this sport for a long time if I just took it a little more seriously at the gym.
Yeah.
If I just kept myself in better shape. Because that's been the frustration with Lehtinen. But I'm with you. Like, I think Dallas is at the point now where you got to start to think about making the decision. If you have an opportunity to bring someone else in, or if you think Jack Campbell, American hero, can be that guy.
He signed Lehtinen signed a five-year extension in 2012. Yeah. It runs through the 2017-18 season. It's a $5.9 million a year cap hit. So he's got a bit of a contract, okay, which is going to make it this whole thing a little bit more complicated. 912 save percentage this season, not all that great. The problem with Jackie Campbell is this. He's been gestating a little bit in those minor leagues, and maybe some of our Dallas and Texas Stars listeners can enlighten us a little bit more. But I look at this kid's numbers. They've not been very good this season, man. 3.18 goals against, 903 save percentage. I've heard the word regression for Jack Campbell. Yeah. I hope that's not the case. Obviously, like you said, he's an American hero. But it really does complicate matters for the Dallas Stars going forward as to what they want to do. But I'm sorry, hey, like you get gassed like Lehtinen got gassed in what was essentially a playoff game yesterday. I just can't roll with that. And it's happened way too many times to how many times do we have to read Lindy Ruff this season in a Mike Hyka column be like, well, you know, our goaltending, it wasn't exactly stellar. But, you know, I mean, there's only so many times it can happen, and I feel like at this point Dallas really has to move off him.
Yeah, you might be right. And as for Jack Campbell, I mean, that just goes to show you, man, you don't turn your back on Michigan for the Windsor Spitfires. You just don't turn your back on Red Barons.
Don't do it at all.
No, it's a cautionary tale for all of you good Division I players to honor your word and go play Division I and don't, you know, take the lure of the CHL. How dare anyway. Continue. Where were we?
So the other game I watched a little bit of was the Buffalo Sabres against what I believe was a collection of 8-year-old boys playing mini sticks on their knees in their parents' rec room. That was. I mean, you talk about tank worthy efforts last night. That was the Arizona Coyotes. That was a fugly one. Here's the thing. We talked briefly about one of the plans that's been put out there, insofar as how to fix tanking. And I'm going to – I don't like to do this very often, but I'm going to do it anyway, which is kind of write my column on the air.
And then not have to do a column and then just link the audio of this conversation?
No. Just go back and go over my audio notes from this podcast. But I was getting into it with Down Goes Brown and with Myrtle before about the idea of tanking. And you know, I think the world is starting to draw up the battle lines amongst the people who just don't give a shit about this and don't see it as an epidemic and see it as something that happens maybe once every 5 years, twice a decade, whatever you want to say about it. Mm. Like Sean McIndoe said, I mean, if you look back, Mario, Lindros, Daig, Ovechkin, would have been Sid, McDavid. Six times since 1984. It's not an epidemic. I mean, it happens when we have a generational talent come through, but by no means is this every single season we're like, oh, the Panthers are tanking for Ekblad. No, it never happens. It happens once every 5 years, okay? The thing that you mentioned yesterday that has the most traction, I think, amongst hockey fans that do want to see some revision in this is the Adam Gold plan. We mentioned this yesterday.
That's his name, yes.
And this is from Down Goes Browns, How to Fix the NHL's Disastrous Tanking Situation column on Grantland. Here's how it works. Each year's draft order is determined by a ranking of the most points earned by each team after being eliminated from the playoffs. As soon as you're officially out of the running for a playoff spot, you start the clock on earning points toward your draft position. Bad teams still get a big advantage here since they'll be getting a head start of several weeks, and teams that narrowly miss the playoffs on the final weekend are basically eliminated from the running for a high pick entirely.
Here's the problem.
So essentially,
hold on, just reset it.
Okay. If you're the Sabres, you get eliminated on February 15th. From that point on, if you amass the most points of the eliminated teams,
you get
the best lottery odds. Or the top pick in the draft. I don't know which one. I guess it eliminates the lottery and you just secure the top pick if you are the leading point getter after being eliminated.
Here's the problem with all of this. And I read it, and I read the part about the interesting idea of establishing a floor, and if you don't hit that number, then you don't qualify for the lottery. That's an interesting idea as well. Here's the problem with all this. Players don't care. Management cares, but the players don't. They really don't. Like, tell me if you're a pending unrestricted free agent on the Buffalo Sabres, and you know you're going somewhere else come July 1st. Does it really matter to you if they win or lose? No, not at all. Like, at the end of all this, the players don't care about the draft. We're invested in the draft as either people that work in the industry, people that may cover the draft, hockey fans that love the sport, that have a team and have a rooting interest. That's all interesting to us. General managers, clearly, ownership, certainly. But the players themselves, they don't care about the draft. In a lot of ways, when you're a pending UFA, you don't really care about the team that you're on towards the stretch. You're just playing it out. How many times have you seen, he's just playing it out, making sure he doesn't get hurt until July 1st?
Yeah, exactly. And I had three kind of problems with it. One was from Steph, a.k.a. my regular face, who's a brilliant GIF creator on Twitter every night. She comes up with these amazing little highlights of all the games that we all try to look at and find out what the hell happened in the game we aren't watching. And her point's well taken, which is that there's a variable involved here, which is that if you are a bad team in a really, really tough division, then this will harm you in a way that you wouldn't be currently harmed in the current lottery system. So in other words, if you're a team that sucks and you get eliminated early, and now the task becomes be good and try to get as many points as you can. Well, that's not really fair if you're in murderer's row, where there's five other teams, six other teams vying for the playoffs, and some other tank-worthy team is in a division where they can maybe beat up some weaker sisters. Well, not weaker sisters. That's misogynistic. Weaker teams. The other problem I have with it is that it also eliminates what should be happening for these teams in theory towards the end of the season, which is the chance to see what you've actually got in your system. Bringing up young players, playing young guys, bringing up the AHL guys, turning over ice time from veterans to younger players.
Well, that's why. Hang on.
I think it disincentivizes that.
That already exists because you're only allowed four call-ups after trade deadline. And I understand why this rule is in place, the Players Association on board, if not leading the charge with this one, because they don't want, and the NHL's with it because they want to keep the integrity of the ticket price and have as many star players on the ice as possible. And you don't want to turn the remainder of your season into a de facto training camp. Let's see what we have on the farm. That's why you only allowed the four call-ups.
I'm not saying that, but we definitely see ice time fluctuation vis-a-vis veteran players and younger players as we get closer to the end of the season with teams that are completely out of it.
Yep,
right?
That's true. Yep, that's true.
Exactly. So I think that there is less incentive to do that if you have to amass points. I mean, if you're the Devils and your average age of player is 45 and you want to play kids versus the veterans, well, why would you play the kids if you have to amass points in order to get a better draft position?
How about this one? You want to get rid of all of it? The minute you're eliminated from the playoffs, automatically your ticket prices go down as mandated by the NHL.
Okay.
I just want to throw it out there just for giggles.
But what about teams come to town? and the third problem I have with it is this. These teams that are eliminated early. Now, sometimes there's a Machiavellian scheme to ensure that they're bad from the minds of geniuses like Tim Murray. And sometimes there's in-season decisions when things go sideways to try to push you towards the bottom, like trading away your two best players or two best scorers this season in Vermette and Yandel, like Don Maloney did. But essentially, my problem is this. These teams that are eliminated early, that look like they're pointed towards the bottom of the league, a lot of times there's nothing more to it than they suck ass, that they're terrible hockey teams. And no matter what you do to put a carrot in front of them and be like, well, if you want to improve your lot in life, try harder. They're effing terrible. They've got bad goalies. They've got bad players. They usually have coaches who don't give a shit and will be fired. Like, you're asking them to basically be good after they couldn't be good. They tried. Like, the Coyotes tried to be good. They just couldn't be good this year because Mike Smith was a sieve. It's not as if Don Maloney came down there like worm tongue from the Lord of the Rings and said, Mike Smith, I think you should suck this year so we can all get great players in the draft. No, the Coyotes wanted to be good this year. They really did. They went out and got Gagne. They did a lot of things to be good this year, except they were shit on toast.
You know what?
So
they decided to
cash in their chips and be even worse than they were.
Here's proof of that. They sent Max Domi back because they weren't in the business. They weren't in the business this year breaking in a first round battle. Could Max Domi have played in the NHL? Probably. I think next year is going to be a bona fide NHL. What a season he's had for the London Knights. But they sent him home. Why? A couple of reasons. One, it's a team that wanted/needed to make the playoffs. And two, they weren't going to break in a rookie while they were trying to make the playoffs. I would have gone full bore, like along with you, like, oh yeah, this is a team that's. This is a team that's tanking. If they just would have said, you know what, let's just bring up the kids. Now, complicating that fact is Buffalo sent Sam Reinhart back to Kootenay. But the difference being is, I'm pretty sure Buffalo said, we don't want Reinhart to be part of this messy season. Let's get him as far away from this as possible. Long-term play, that's probably the best thing. But I think with Max Domi and the Arizona Coyotes, I think they're saying to themselves, we need to make the playoffs here. We need to see some playoff revenue. We can't be in the business of breaking in Mikhail Bodker again. So, sorry, Max, going back to London.
In the Sabres' case, I think they didn't want him to be like everybody on Edmonton. they want him to have some hope in his heart. That's a
really good point. And they gave him the taste. You know, they gave him the little audition at the beginning of the season and sent him back to Kootenay. 100%.
So that's my basic problem with this goal plan is, like, you essentially are saying, okay, you are an abjectly terrible team, and you have been eliminated from the postseason contention. Sorry things didn't work out, but now
get
on your horse and start doing the thing that you couldn't do for 65 games or whatever it is.
Yeah,
like, it's that's the part of the plan that just drives me nuts, and you'll be able to read more about it when I go back and listen to this conversation and steal all the ideas from my column. Joining us now is someone who I will refuse once again to believe I'm going to owe a case of champagne to. But I believe it's probably going to happen based on the tragic numbers and magic numbers I've seen. She is Helena St. James of the Detroit Free Press, and she joins us now on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. Hello, ma'am. How are you?
Great, thank you. How are you?
Now, do you want Greg to send actual champagne, or will sparkling white wine suffice?
I very distinctly recall him saying Dom Perignon was on the table. He was that confident.
Well, that's because I said that because I was drinking it at the time, which is why I made this bet. And you'll be taken care of. I mean, let's not count our chickens yet. I mean, from the looks of things, the Red Wings still need a combination of gaining 6 points or Ottawa losing 6 points in order to clinch, which obviously won't happen. So I don't think you're in the clear quite yet, but it's looking good for you, I think.
Well, they've certainly had a very strange March. I mean, they had such a great January and February and they didn't have Jimmy Howard for part of it even, but they were on the road so much, and were looking so great, and then you could probably expect a little bit of a dip after they had a really kind of strenuous end to February. But then, you know, it's just continued. I mean, they've not won. This is astounding to me. They haven't won two games in a row all of March, and until March, they hadn't lost two in regulation all season. That should tell you a little bit about how, you know, and it hasn't just been goaltending. I mean, the special teams have struggled, and they were without Datsyuk for a handful of games and such. But, you know, they need really to, you know, show themselves something. I think they realize that they need a booster, an ego booster, a huge game tonight versus Ottawa and then Boston on Thursday, two teams that are right below them.
Let me ask you about the goaltending for a quick second. Peter Mrazek and Jimmy Howard, Exhibit A and Exhibit B. This year we've heard so much about the goaltending coaches and the influence on their starting goaltenders, whether it's Mitch Korn in Washington, whether it's Mike Bales in Pittsburgh. Where are you at, or where's your organization at on the work that Jim Bedard has done with the goalies this year?
I think, they keep giving him a contract, so to me that indicates they're very, very happy with what he's doing. I mean, he's, you know, had a great success with Jimmy for the most part, and has eased Peter Mrazek's transition as he's come up from the AHL, and Mrazek's certainly going to be a full-timer with the Wings next season. So I think they're very pleased with where he's at and with where the goaltending is at as far as coaching goes.
As far as coaching goes, but performance has been a little bit trickier. The way I broke it down yesterday, and you can tell me if I'm completely wrong on this, is that Jimmy Howard gives them competency, but not necessarily the ability to steal games in a series. Mrazek gives them the ability to steal games in a series, but he might give the game back the next game. Is that kind of how you see this thing breaking down as we look towards who might be starting in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I like a lot about Mrazek is he handles the puck so well, whereas Jimmy kind of jackhammers it to skaters and such. So, you know, that's one of the advantages he has. Now, I think at this point, they just take one of them having two good games in a row and such. I mean, Mrazek, it's interesting. He tends to be either really good or really bad. I mean, he's been pulled four times, and he's come back with a bounce-back game every single time. But, you know, that Sunday, I was a little bit surprised he's going with Mrazek again tonight just because he was really awful Sunday. And Jimmy Howard did make 15 stops and 15 saves and 16 shots. I mean, it wasn't like the Islanders stopped playing. It was a one-goal game. So, to me, that kind of indicates he really is kind of iffy on Howard right now. And if Mrazek plays well tonight, he'll certainly start him again Thursday. And then you have the interesting situation coming up this weekend. They play back-to-back games. Usually, you know, they go with two guys. But anyway, for right now, I honestly think Mike Babcock isn't looking past what happens tonight. He doesn't have a good handle either on which one is going to be his guy when they will make the playoffs for the 2014
season. And you will be well refreshed, courtesy of Greg Wyshynski. Let me ask you about the next couple of games, Ottawa and Boston. We keep hearing about there is going to be a playoff intensity with these two games. I mean, this is a veteran squad. This is a lot of guys that have been there before, played in games like this. Sure, there are some younger members of the squad who haven't, but is there anything different that Detroit does for quote unquote big games like this, or is it just business as usual as you march through the 82 game season?
No, I think they do. I mean, they have a better record of starting on time a lot of times because, you know, they know they have good scoring depth and they're getting Riley Sheahan back tonight. So they sometimes fall into the tendency of thinking, we'll start, you know, in the second period and pull out a win. And they did, I haven't looked lately, but then the February they had the best record by far in the NHL for coming back even after two periods when trailing. They were that good of a comeback team, so I'm sure that's taken a nosedive in March, but I think just in general they realize it's a sense I've been getting from the locker room the last few days is that, you know, as much as they talk about it's good to go through a little bit of controversy and you learn from it and such, that you know they can see the Bruins very, very close in the rear view mirror, and I would be surprised if they don't have a really good start tonight and don't come away with 2 points.
Zetterberg and Datsyuk this season. Zetterberg 61-71 for a -4, a rare -4 for him. Datsyuk, ho hum, point of game as per usual. For those who maybe have not seen, you know, a lot of the Wings this season, how have those two guys held up? How have they played this season?
Well, you know, that was what was interesting because coming into the season, one of the things that had to go right for them is their health, especially of those two guys. They didn't have either one of them for half a season each last season, and Zetterberg not for the first three games of the playoffs. That's why they did the way they did. Still made the playoffs, though. But, you know, no, I mean, and Zetterberg probably missed the first several weeks of the season, and Zetterberg really carried the team. And, you know, it was easy to see they really, really missed Datsyuk when he was out earlier this month. So, but no, they've been tremendous for them. Zetterberg's led the team in scoring really, I think, all season, and Dux has been right up there. He's the only point per game player. So, no, they're their two big game changers. As good as Nyquist is, as good as Tatar is, if there's 10 seconds left for them to get a goal, that's, you know, you want to see Zetterberg or Datsyuk with a puck. They're still amazing players in their mid-30s.
And inspiring for all those younger players on the team that I'll say to a person, we want to be like number 13 in red. Can we go back to trade deadline quickly? Because I know that the Maple Leafs and the Detroit Red Wings were talking for pretty much the entire morning, Dion Phaneuf being the centerpiece. I was told the name going the other way was Brendan Smith. Obviously, it didn't go anywhere. The Wings perhaps wanted Toronto to pick up some of Phaneuf's salary. But from what you've been able to glean, how far along did those talks go, and how close were they to doing a deal with Toronto?
Well, I know that Phaneuf was discussed within the Wings, you know, brain trust. I mean, any time a player of that caliber is made available, I think any team would talk about it. My understanding is that for the Wings, once Toronto brought up Anthony Mantha, and he's a yeah. no-go for the Wings. Same with Dylan Larkin. I mean, that was kind of when Tyler Myers was available in Buffalo. That was the issue there as well. These are their Datsyuk and Zetterberg, and, you know, the next two of those. So they're not relinquishing either one of those. Like, to me, I think that was the biggest stumbling block for them, that they just, you know, and it would just have been, I mean, to me, the guy they did get, Sedlicki, has been a fantastic pickup for them. He's made an impact almost every single game, was, you know, producing points for them right away. He's just such a smart, smart player that he's been a fantastic pickup for them.
Yeah, watching him for the Devils, I mean, I knew that was a real shrewd move, perfect puck-handling D-man for that group. He's gonna have a turnover at some point in the playoffs that will get people very, very angry at him. But overall, a good veteran pickup for sure. So, which first round? Let's assume that Detroit can hold off the onrushing Boston Bruins. I mean, obviously they will. We all know that Florida is gonna usurp the Bruins for the last wild card. Let's say it's either Montreal or Tampa Bay in the first round. Who does Detroit want more? Do they want the Habs or they want the Bolts in the first round?
I don't think anybody would want Carey Price, and I think Detroit feels a lot better about playing Tampa after the way they played them Saturday. I mean, Mrazek had a shutout, but he only faced 24 shots. The whole team played really, really well Saturday, and that they needed that because they hadn't beaten Tampa all season. And they did actually also play well the other time they were in Tampa in January. That was just a game where Mrazek was absolutely horrible, and Babcock said as much afterward that just he was no good, and he liked the way the rest of the team played, so he thought it was one of their best starts on the road all season. So I think they're comfortable with Tampa, and I think also, you know, not going to Canada and dealing with customs just from a travel perspective, they like that. So, and a lot more low-key. I don't know, is the Canadian hockey media, is that a thing? Are they kind of, can they be kind of rabid at times? I think the Florida hockey media isn't quite as intense. So I think they'd be, you know, I mean, they're never going to tell you, but I think that if I were them, I think I'd rather have Tampa. But what's interesting is, I mean, if they don't win, they could potentially end up playing the Rangers, depending on how 1 and 2 and 7 and 8 play out, right? I mean, if they fall into a wild card spot again, so.
That's the most fascinating sort of get off my lawn old guy outlook of a playoff picture I've ever heard. Like, we don't want to have to go through customs. We don't want to have to talk to all the reporters in Toronto. It's just like,
no, I mean, just from the perspective of it, it just adds to the travel. So I think from that, it's a lot easier just to pop back and forth between Tampa and such. So no, I mean, I'm just saying, like, if anything goes wrong, they'd have a lot less. It's so easy to notice in the locker room when they're playing a Canadian team versus an American team, because when it's a Canadian team, I think there's actually a fire hazard in the room as far as too many people.
It's true.
But although from my perspective, I mean, I love Montreal, so I would worked fine for me. So.
You know, when you mentioned the New York Rangers, I'm trying to rack my brain to try to figure out when the last time Detroit actually played the Rangers in the playoffs. I think we have to go back to the early 50s, since the last time these two teams met in the playoffs. Like for that reason alone, it would be fascinating. And for that reason alone, you love to see them on quote unquote rivalry nights. Two teams
rivalry
that haven't
night.
Met going back to the 50s in the playoffs, facing off against each other. So that one would be interesting. Valtteri Filppula was the first, as you very well know, the first Finn to ever suit up for the Detroit Red Wings. Teemu Polkinen, stand out at the American League level and playing quite well, thank you very much, at the NHL level as well. Now with the Detroit Red Wings. Curious about the future plans for Polkinen. Where do they see him fitting in?
Oh, they like him a lot, and you know, he's one of the few players, and that's why they went after Sidlitsky, is, you know, they want some right hand shots. They're just full of left wingers, but or left-handed shots. So they like him a lot. They like his shot a lot. He's, you know, not a very big guy, but I think he you can tell he's a lot more comfortable now. So he definitely, I mean, he's up here now for good, and he'll be a part of the team next season. So they're very pleased with how he, you know, he's kind of followed in the footsteps of Tatar and Nyquist, and, you know, excelling at the AHL level and come up and is now, you know, kind of trying to figure out his way out, and for the most part doing so at the NHL level. I think the guy who hasn't been as nearly as good as Thomas Yurko, I mean, I'm a little bit surprised he hasn't ended up going back to the minors at all, because he went, I think, 3 months between scoring a goal there for a while and just looked like he didn't really know what he was doing. So, but they like his size, so... So, you know, all in all, I mean, I think it's pretty remarkable, given that because of how well they do, and that the fact they always make the postseason, they really haven't had very many high draft picks. And yet, you know, they've really, really relied on their farm team for the past two seasons to keep them well stocked. And Morassic's just the latest proof.
Last one for me is about the coach. I don't know where the wind's blowing out by you right now, but what can you tell us about your inkling about the future of one Michael Babcock as Detroit Red Wings coach?
I think it's 60-40 that he stays. I mean, we know Toronto is a billion-dollar franchise, right? And they want to throw $5 million at him. They can.
Mr.
Ilitch is going to make him the highest-paid coach. The Wings will offer him $3.75 million and make him the highest-paid coach and give him 5-6 years, whatever he wants as far as term. But Toronto could throw a crazy offer his way and maybe, you know, give him, I mean, the thing people were looking at Detroit is he does have input on what players they get. Ken Holland doesn't operate as an island. It's usually, you know, if there's a player, they talk, go around the room, the scouts as well, say, do you like him yet? Yay, nay. And, so he's, you know, I mean, he wanted Steven Weiss instead of Terry Fulpula. He wanted Jordan Tutu 2 years ago. So he does have an input in what players get brought in for Detroit and such. Maybe he gets full, Toronto gives him full power as well. I don't know. The one thing I do know about Mike is he likes winning. And if I'm looking at Detroit and I'm looking at Toronto, which team is going to win more next season and the season beyond that? I mean, to me, Toronto just seems, you know,
why would Mike want to get involved in that mess right now? Like, really, why would Mike want to try to come in and untangle this? You know what I mean? Like, why?
Right.
There is some
egotistical purpose that, or egotistical, maybe if you think so, I can come in and be the savior of a team that hasn't done anything in 5 decades as far as coming anywhere near the cup. So, but you know, he works for a great owner, for an original six team in a city that's passionate about hockey, but also has interest in the NFL, baseball, you know, college football, a very well-rounded sports city, whereas I think in Toronto it's just Maple Leafs and that's it. You know, they really do believe they're the center of the hockey universe, as Brian Berglund said.
It's tunnel vision. last one for me. It's Gordie Howe's 87th birthday today. He's gone fishing. He's still hanging in there. Gordie's doing great. When I say the name Gordie Howe to you, what comes to your mind right away?
It's absolutely an amazing story that he's still around. I mean, Mark Howe told me in October and again in December they didn't think he was going to make it. You know, and it's just and anytime I write a story about him, I can count on just dozens of emails from people of all ages talking about how special it was. They recollect meeting him here and there. And, you know, Steve Yzerman, I talked to him a few months ago about him, and he said, you know, he's the one guy in hockey who's just beloved by all, you know, like people who play, I mean, old guys who still played against him and remember his elbows and checks. And, you know, he's that special of a guy. And anyone, any fan who ever met him just always is like, oh, you know, he was supposed to get out of there, but he spent extra minutes with us. He just, and, you know, to me, part of the proof of what a great man he and what a great woman his wife Colleen was is the children they raised, you know, and how closely knit they are. I mean, it's just, they're a remarkable, remarkable story.
Is indeed.
Great stuff.
And right, you know what I hear? He likes cake and he likes champagne.
Perfect. Take that right. Wish. Stick that one in your pipe. Whatever.
Nice one. Nice
all right. One. Well, when next we speak, I'm sure it'll be me figuring out where to send a case of
you know what it'll
cold
be?
Duck.
It will be you finally spending your communion money. That's what it'll be, Craig.
Well, that's true. Maybe someone can turn water into champagne for me. If I do that.
We shall see.
All right. Thank you, Elena.
My pleasure. Anytime.
We'll talk soon. You still have that onion wallet, Wish?
The onion wallet?
Yeah, the one where you open it and you start crying.
Question of the day today was which potential playoff matchups in any round are you most looking forward to? And as expected, a lot of people with some similar answers. Martin chimes in. Chicago, Los Angeles Kings last year is one of the best playoff series ever. An encore Western Conference final would be nice. Yeah, but, you know, there's one team in that scenario that's going to hold up their end of the bargain.
That's right.
And I don't know if they're going to do it, man. Holy shit. Who thought the Kings would be in this situation, man?
Nobody. But if there's one team that's enjoying this, it's the San Jose Sharks, because all the attention is deflected from them bowing out on the West Coast if Los Angeles doesn't qualify. I never saw it coming. But that would be, you know, the one of the great things last year from a broadcast point of view was that Chicago-Los Angeles was frickin' fantastic hockey. Mm-hmm. And you know who was dynamite in that series? Bob
Who's
Cole.
That
was the return. Like, in some ways, that was Bob. That was another Bob Cole stamp. Like, go back and listen to Bob Cole's call of Los Angeles, and anyone that was there to tune into it knows what I'm talking about. That was a great call for a great series, proving once again that great broadcasters rise to the occasion of great games and great series. And Bob Cole was fantastic in that one last year.
For sure.
It was great.
Actually, the Kings are an interesting situation because, okay, they've got six left, which is the same number as Winnipeg, game in hand on Calgary. They're six left. Edmonton twice.
Yeah.
Colorado at home. At Vancouver, which ain't easy. At Calgary. But if this thing comes down to the final game of the season.
Good Lord, can you imagine?
Winnipeg Jets play the Calgary Flames. And the Los Angeles Kings play the San Jose Sharks.
How much would San Jose love to shut the door on the Los Angeles Kings?
Oh, man. I know.
That could become their Stanley Cup.
And that would count towards their total for improving their draft position, too.
Oh, smokes.
Shane Clausing writes in, Vancouver and Calgary would be an easy choice. For one, Vancouver is a completely different team now than they were 2-3 years ago. This isn't the same Canucks team that complains and cries every time they get hit. They play like actual men. Yeah, bros, beers. As for Calgary, nobody had these guys making the playoffs. Everyone said that they would be in the McDavid sweepstakes, and now they are 4-5 wins away from clinching a playoff spot. They deserve to be in the playoffs more than any other team in the NHL. Also, the ratings for Sportsnet would jump like crazy. I could already see Scott Moore jumping out of his chair and celebrating. Is that true? Would an all-Canadian Vancouver-Calgary series be as gangbusters as,
say... It'd be big.
Not as big as Montreal-Boston, though, would it?
I don't think so. No, but it would still be huge. I mean, you're drawing on two pretty big Canadian markets. The problem with that is, if I can put on my Sportsnet programmer hat, which I'm not qualified for, nor do I have the same pay grade, but the problem with that is it eliminates a Canadian team right out of the gate. So
I
if you're, I know you love that. Trust me, you're dining out on that and you're ordering more wine.
Two teams enter, one team leaves.
It's a no-lose proposition for noted Canadian hater Greg Wyshynski. Yeah, that would be the problem from a broadcast point of view, is one Canadian team ends up leaving, whether it's Vancouver or Calgary. But the ratings would be big. Numbers would be big on that series. Numbers are always big when any Canadian team makes it. Always. Doesn't matter. I mean,
Kevin Moriarty writes in, matchup in the East I want to see most is the Yzerman Cup between Tampa and Detroit.
Me
too. Matchup of the West I want to see most is Winnipeg versus Chicago, because all of the ex-Hawks on Winnipeg and Taves playing against his hometown. That's an excellent answer. I don't know how long we'd have to wait to find it, but that's an excellent answer.
Okay. A couple of years ago, they laughed at me when I brought this up, but it may happen. It won't happen in the first round, but it may happen at some point during this year's playoffs. Remember when I said that somewhere down the road, the next great rivalry that's about to happen in the NHL is Minnesota and Winnipeg, geographically they align. All they needed was a playoff series, or they needed an issue, someone to do something dumb in one of the games. We could have the real beginning of a rivalry if those two teams meet in the playoffs this year. Yeah. That would be spectacular. And you know who would guarantee it would be a rivalry? The fans of the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. Who would be relentless on the Minnesota Wild. This one, fingers crossed. It's not going to be first round, but dream matchup somewhere in the playoffs this year is Minnesota-Winnipeg for me.
It sucks right now that we're going to lose either St. Louis or Chicago in the first round.
I know. It's
like, I know that series is going to be a ton of fun, and I actually think St. Louis could be catching Chicago at the right time. But, yeah, it sucks that one of them's got to go. I would much rather see the dance partners get split up, and it would be St. Louis, Minnesota, Nashville, Chicago.
Although, you know what?
Those teams in play.
I remember seeing Genesis once. And was it Genesis? No, it was Genesis. No, it was Phil Collins. And they opened up with In the Air Tonight. No, it was Phil Collins because Chestertown. Was it Genesis? I can't remember. They opened up with In the Air. Yeah. There's something to be said about playing the hit single right out of the gates. Just come out and just play your hit song. There is something interesting about Chicago and St. Louis.
Have you ever been to a show where they play this? They only have like two hits and they play the one huge hit twice.
I've always wanted to go to a Jimmy Buffett concert because I heard that he plays Margaritaville a couple times. I've never been to a show where they do that, but I would love that.
I have been to a Jimmy Buffett show. I went to a Jimmy Buffett show at not Meriwether Post Pavilion, Nissan Pavilion maybe? Whatever Nissan Pavilion's called in Virginia. I've only been to one Jimmy Buffett show, and wow, what a shit show. It is like, it is as you'd expect. It's like being in Cozumel. Everybody's there. They're dancing around. Mom and Dad are embarrassing themselves. And it's not so much singing as it is like a lot of like kind of thing. It's like, you know, it's like Neil Diamond doesn't really sing anymore. He speaks, and Jimmy Buffett's much more like just kind of like than actually singing. But it was a really fun time.
I'd love to go. I've never been, and I've always wanted to go to a Jimmy Buffett show.
But, it's like it's one of those situations where you park your any modicum of respect you have for yourself at the front gate. And then put on your loud Hawaiian shirt. And it's like, fins to the left, fins. Oh, look, everybody's putting their fin to the right. It's like that. It's just the goofiest
shit.
Like being at Disney World.
Here's what I've always thought about that. As a kid, you know, you grow up and every now and then you see dad drunk, but it's really weird when you see mom drunk. I would imagine at a Jimmy Buffett show, there's a lot of like, wow, mom's drunk. This is weird.
Oh, yeah.
This is bizarre. There's a lot of moms drunk at this show.
I never have a third beer.
Normally, I never do this, but mom, stop it.
Mom, what? Put that down. Put those away. They unfurled.
Cover that up. Mom.
Who is? That's not dad. Eric Wood writes in, I'd love to see the Blackhawks play the Canadiens, two of my favorite teams. But other than those two teams in the final, I'd like to see two teams that have never won the cup in the final. Or I'd like to see the Islanders in there, who would be a feel-good story of the year. Well, the Islanders, obviously, the deeper the run goes, the more it's going to be wonderful because of the Nassau Coliseum thing. But
yeah.
I'm down with two teams that had never won it before. But, you know, one of those teams we always figured would be the Sharkies at some
Sharks.
Point. So I guess the all-virgin cup final, as far as teams that have never gone all the way,
St. Louis.
Would be for me St. Louis
Blues.
And the Capitals.
St. Louis Blues. Yep. Those are two good ones.
Yep.
I mean, you have a 1976 team, or sorry, a 1967 team, and then when the Caps come in, 74? Yeah. I've been around long enough with those two teams. Yeah, I want to see them in the final. I'm good with that.
Yeah, because everybody else in the East has won outside of the Caps. They're the only virgin. The Bolts obviously won that epic battle against Calgary. I don't know if you remember this, Merrick, but we had a captain fight in that series.
No. There's no fights in playoffs, especially not in the Stanley Cup final. It doesn't happen.
Ottawa is still a virgin. Cats still a virgin. Preds a virgin.
So funny because we're just doing the Reservoir Dogs theme with
Vancouver.
Like a Virgin before the podcast today. Then you're bringing up all these virgin teams.
Cup.
Hence, Like a Virgin.
Cup.
That's good. Nice wish.
Winnipeg, Minnesota, Vancouver, and the Preds and the Blues. So you got a lot of virgin territory over in that Western Conference, but only the Capitals.
I know. It's fun.
If the Sens and the Cats don't make it, then the Caps. Let's talk about the Caps real real quick though.
Go quick. I have 2 minutes. I got to hop on a conference call.
Well, we're gonna get the hell out of here in a second.
Okay.
At Boston versus Carolina versus Tampa versus Montreal versus Boston versus the Devils to end the season. They obviously have to sweep those Boston games.
Tonight is freaking huge.
They get Luongo back tonight from a little bit of an injury.
Come on,
Boston.
Cats.
Boston's got at Detroit, Toronto, at the Caps, at Florida, at Tampa after tonight. I still feel like the Bruins aren't out of the wilderness yet, both because of Ottawa, who has a game in hand, but also I feel like the Cats could pull this thing off and sweep them.
I'll tell you what, if there's one game that Phil Kessel needs to get up for after the years of thank you Kessel chance at TD Garden, doesn't it have to be that game on the 4th?
Mm-hmm.
To like, if you want to stick it, if you like, okay, let's say Florida beats Boston tonight, right, and then the Bruins lose to Detroit on Thursday, and then they're facing off against Toronto on the 4th. Like, and who do the Cats have that night? Tampa. If you're Phil Kessel, is that not a game where you're like, you know what? F it. I want to snap in 4 today.
The Battle of Florida. No, I agree. And there's a lot of teams that have something to play. I mean, obviously the problem for the Cats is that they also have to play Tampa and Montreal, who are right now jockeying to avoid the Red Wings in the first round.
Oh, and the problem with that is that's back-to-back, by the way.
Yeah.
Enjoy that.
So it ain't going to be easy. But I would love – you see, it's all about trying to extend this fun as far as we can, right? And the Cats went in tonight, all due respect to my friends in Boston, and I would love nothing more than to head up to Boston and hit all the bars and see all the boys and knock them back with Hags and all of them up there. Like,
yeah,
that'd
dude.
Be total super fun. What?
Go to Florida and go across the street to the mall and go to P.F. Chang's. Get ham.
We are oh, you're terrible. That's why I'm rooting for Ottawa, because I love nothing more than sitting on an effing bus for like an hour and a half to go from downtown Ottawa to...
I know.
It Kanata? Katana?
Kanata.
Zartana?
From the Tokyo Katanas, that's where Taro Sugimoto was drafted from.
Taro Sugimoto played. Right. And obviously, nobody ever talks about that tank. All right, listen, everybody. We are out of here.
Are you going to end with the heckler?
Maddie Brown, if you've not heard this guy, this is a thing that happened this past week. A news station talked to a guy who goes to junior hockey games and heckles
Good
players.
Lord.
And you've got to listen to his voice. It's one of the greatest Canadian accents I've ever heard. We'll end with that. I'm not sure on tomorrow, but definitely back Thursday. And
Thursday.
We'll go
definitely
from there.
Thursday.
And loves and kisses. Thank you, Helena St. James.
Smoochie.
Enjoy your champagne. And and I'll enjoy my pain. And that's all, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon. Here's a heckler. You have to hear his voice.
Super fan Corey Sims, whose belligerence in the bleachers caused a championship controversy a couple of weeks ago, isn't apologizing tonight. As NTV's Katie Breen reports, he's a heckler and proud of it.
Go Cats, go!
To Corey Sims, heckling is a part of the game, just like fist fighting and losing teeth. Sims knows his antics get under everyone's skin, but he says, suck it up.
You know, if the hockey moms can't handle me yelling and heckling at the rinks, I think they should stick to crosswords and knitting. And if the young boys, young men, I should say, can't handle a bit of heckling at the rink, they should stick to tiddlywinks and PlayStation.
Junior B players are between 18 and 22, not kids, and old enough, Sim says, to block out his commentary. He's loud and obnoxious, he knows, but harmless, even though he was once accused of blocking an injured player from getting medical attention, something he denies.
In the paper it said I told a lady that I was going to rip her head off and clean the ice with it. I mean, come on, that's disgusting. Besides that, I'm not a terrorist. That's like ISIS stuff. They use knives. She's like putting me out worse. Like I'm just going to rip her head off and wipe the ice with it. Come on.
The league doesn't have the authority to ban people from rinks. So instead, they sent Sims a letter asking him not to come to any more games. When the Conception Bay Junior Renegades thought he wouldn't listen, they forfeited a game and maybe their chances at a championship. Twin Rink says they've gotten complaints about the heckler Sims, but never from the Renegades hockey team. Sims has been banned from some rinks. Twin Rink says if he causes problems here, they'll toss him.
I'm just a heckler. I'm that guy. I'm a local legend for heckling. I'll heckle ball hockey games. That's who I am. I'm a heckler.